Hip-hop's reach is global, topping charts in countries all over the world. And what's more, influencing artists who are producing hip-hop music in their native countries and in their native tongues. I'm Joe Lee, and this is Pop Life.
Digital content on W8ER is supported by Hunter Springs Landscape Artisans, specializing in pool environment projects, outdoor living rooms and kitchens, natural stone craftsmanship, and traditional landscape projects since 1983. Information at hunterspringslandscape.com.
Imagine topping the music charts as a hip-hop artist in a country like Sweden. Dropping 8 solo albums, many of them hitting gold and platinum sales status, winning 8 Swedish Grammy Awards. With those kinds of accomplishments, an artist like my next guest, Jason Timbuktu Diakité, can assuredly identify as a bona fide star in his homeland. But when you're born brown in a country known for blondes and Volvos, I can't help but wonder how that challenges national identity. Jason writes eloquently about it in his acclaimed biography, A Drop of Midnight. Born in Lund to interracial American parents, Jason has roots in South Carolina, Harlem, and Scranton, Pennsylvania. His parents' journey to Sweden was all about opportunity, opportunity that they couldn't get here in America. Brother Jason, how are you?
Jolie, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying your book and really looking forward to chatting about it.
Wonderful.
I'm really interested in starting from the beginning with your parents, mm-hmm. Moving from the U.S. to Sweden. Tell us a little bit about your parents and why they decided to move to Sweden, of all places.
Yeah, so my parents met in the 60s in New York City. My dad at the time was living in Harlem. My mom was a social worker. And they met on 110th Street in what is now known as Frederick Douglass Boulevard and fell in love. And it was an unusual love at the time and not one that was accepted by neither my dad's family nor my mom's. Mm-hmm. My dad also coming from poverty, basically, could not afford a university education. But he was a filmmaker at the time and was invited to the film school in Copenhagen in Denmark. And while in Denmark, he met a man from Zambia who said, you know, in the neighboring country of Sweden, you can study in English at the university for free.
Wow.
And he saw that as his shot to get a university education and an education to be his, as he always says, his way out the ghetto. He has been in Sweden ever since, and he convinced my mom, who was courageous enough to come along to this unknown land of Sweden. You know, of course, in 1969, when they moved to Sweden, I mean, you know, the world was not as small and interconnected as it is today.
Yeah.
She really knew nothing about the country she was moving to, you know, and it was vastly different than the New York City where they moved from.
Yeah,
but I think that's what gives my book kind of a twist is that, you know, America is mainly known for being a country that people migrate to. Not so often are the stories told of the people who migrate from it.
Growing up in Sweden as a brown child was not easy, but it was hip-hop music and culture that helped him forge his identity.
From about the age of 6, 7, I became very aware of how hyper-visible my skin color was as soon as I left home and stepped out into society. And being one of only 3 brown kids in my entire school for the first 6 years, I spent most of those recesses during those 6 years fighting the same group of bullies, calling me the same racial slurs each day. It was painful lessons in what my skin color meant as a child. Now, being at that age, having that strong need to belong, it made me at the time feel like my skin color was such a problem for me that I grew ashamed of it and tried to hide it as, you know, best I could, which of course was impossible. So all the more kind of revelatory to me when I at 14, discover hip-hop,
right,
and see these rappers carry themselves with confidence. And and with pride, despite their, you know, humble beginnings and the neighborhoods and boroughs that they came from. And it strengthened me, and it also made me feel like my skin color for the first time actually was a gift, a source of richness, you know?
So you used hip-hop in a way to find self-identity, to find, to sort of create or define your identity a bit more, didn't
you? Yeah, absolutely. And that's really something I want to tell American readers, is how much American, and specifically in this case, African-American culture, and in my case, it being hip-hop culture, has meant to not only kids in Sweden, but I've traveled to, you know, I've met rappers in China, in Peru, in South Africa, in Slovakia, who all identify and feel the same way that I do about hip-hop. And it's really an extraordinary thing, I would say. No, hip-hop has been I call it Black CNN, you know. the ancestors of enslaved Africans in this country, in America, and the African diaspora and the globe have never had a CNN or a BBC, but jazz and blues and poetry and hip-hop has been that, and it's connected, I think, people of the African diaspora in such a strong way. You know, I in Sweden, a lot of my friends are from, you know, from Uganda or Ethiopia, or, you know, from Iran, mm-hmm. or from Iraq. Yet and still, you know, Malcolm is a hero to all, and the African American story is our story also. It's really hard to explain, I think, and I just think it's such a beautiful thing that I want to tell people about, you know.
Yeah, it is kind of hard to explain, but at the same time, we get it. You know, music connects us, and the hip hop culture has global influence. After achieving incredible success as a hip-hop artist in Sweden, Jason Diakité was missing something. Growing up in a country where neither of his parents were born, Jason was missing a connection to his roots, a tangible understanding of not only where he came from, but who he came from. Jason had to make what he called a genetic phone call. He decided to use A Drop of Midnight to document his journey of self-discovery.
I started writing it at a time when I was really ready to map out my heritage, my family history, to find completion and wholeness. You know, being born, I was literally born in the in-between countries, in between cultures, in between skin colors even. And I think I had that strong need that I'd carried for so long to connect these different shards. I needed to map it out in a book. And something happens when writing. That's why I encourage people to, you know, even if you're not trying to write a book or be an author or write op-eds or whatever, keep a journal. But just writing down your emotions and your experiences, even if it's one or two sentences per day, something happens when you pull your thoughts and emotions out of your head where there are no dimensions and put them left to right, up to down on a piece of paper. And that's what happened to me when reading this book. I discovered so much about myself, my father, my mother, about what sacrifice and courage means, what legacy means. And it's really strengthened me. And I think in how I want to, what type of father I want to be to my daughter, you know?
Mm-hmm. And speaking of legacy and journey, you actually did travel back to places like Charleston, South Carolina, mm-hmm. Harlem, New York, mm-hmm. Even I see it written in my hometown of Baltimore, Maryland. What was that journey like? Were there any aha moments for you?
Oh, there were so many. So my grandfather was born in a small town called Allendale in the inland of South Carolina. So as I was writing the book, I realized that I really needed to go to Allendale, just see it, you know, feel feel the air, the atmosphere, and see the landscape, to be truly connected to him in a way, or try to connect with him. And while driving, before I enter this small town, I look out the car window and see this endless, you know, seemingly endless field of cotton. And the cotton was high. And I just, you know, I hadn't realized that the cotton still grew. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, I was rubbing my eyes. The only thing missing in my field of vision right now are black bodies picking this stuff, you know, because mm-hmm. that's what happened. And I jumped out of the car without thinking and walked onto the field, and I had a little paper bag with me and just needed to feel what it was like to pick some bowls of this cotton. Mm-hmm. Because that's, you know, my grandfather from the age of 5 picked cotton. Mm-hmm. That's what all his, you know, that's what his whole family did. They were sharecroppers. And to me, it was what I call a genetic phone call. You know, it was connecting me to my ancestors and ancestry. And then, you know, traveling up to Baltimore and driving around Baltimore with my uncle and hearing him speak and seeing the obvious decay mm-hmm. of the city that and I kept feeling like, wow, it really looks like The Wire, you know?
Yeah. I get that every time I go home, every single time.
Right?
I'm still.
Yeah, and hearing my uncle speak, you know, he was in Vietnam. He's a veteran, and we saw, you know, we stopped at a red light, and there were some homeless guys, white guys actually, you know, with signs saying, you know, homeless vet, a hungry homeless vet, and stuff like that. Just seeing another side of America that I'd read about in books and seen and on TV shows and in movies, but never really actually felt, mm-hmm. was very revelatory to me, I would say.
How has or has this journey of self-discovery, this defining period in your life, how has it changed, or how is it reflected in your music today in a way that it wasn't before all of this?
I think I have a new sense of, you know, I know more of what it has taken to get me here. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm standing more securely on the shoulders of those that came before. And really the only, my only kind of guiding light now is to really write things that can help explain this to my daughter, basically. But that's where I am right now. She hasn't even turned 2 yet. So mm-hmm. she's still very young. But I just think that I'm a lot more secure in who I am and what I am. And having come to terms with this need of one story, one people, one country has been laid to rest. So if anything, I just think I'm, you know, an even more vocal proponent of the fact that diversity is strength. I think that's, if I were to say one line about what the message in my book is, it is that.
That's great. Jason Timbuktu Diakité, hip-hop artist and author of the book A Drop of Midnight, thank you very much for sharing this with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
A Drop of Midnight offers themes of race, manhood, and family. It's an examination of what it means to be rootless and the struggle for belonging. It's Jason Diakité's remarkable voyage of self-discovery and complex history undoubtedly shared by generations across the African diaspora. We're grateful that he shared his story with us today on Pop Life. Please follow the show on whatever platform you use to get your podcast and connect with us on Facebook at Pop Life WAER. On the next Pop Life, we'll discuss ways to keep yourself busy and entertained in the age of COVID-19. Until then, stay safe.